Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to the Seahawks Man to Man podcast, powered by The Athletic. Shout out to the company. My name is Michael Sean Dugar. I'm here with my co-host, Christopher Kidd. Make sure you follow us both up on the Tweet Machine. And if you're listening to the audio version of the podcast right now, subscribe to our YouTube channel, Seahawks Man to Man on YouTube. Let's talk to him.
What is up, everybody? It's your boy, Christopher Kidd. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at CKIDD206 and CKidD206.
We have a special guest on the podcast this week, making his 87th appearance on the show, it feels like. But that's what happens when you cover a division rival. We have Matt Barrows, who covers the 49ers for The Athletic. Matt, what's going on? Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you guys. Yeah, 87 is my age, not the number of times I've appeared. No, good to be with you guys again for the first, maybe second, maybe third time this year. Who knows? Sometimes that happens.
Yeah, and I'm sure like some of our listeners are probably, they want us to just like probably just be all doom and gloom about the Seahawks this week and not even talk about the Niners too much just because of how bad the Seattle Seahawks have been playing. But I feel like talking about the Niners would be kind of interesting because this is a big game for Seattle. And I imagine the Niners, even though this isn't like for the division like it was in 2019, are pretty hyped up to play these guys with a fully healthy roster for the first time since that
19 NFC West Championship.
Well, I wouldn't say fully healthy.
That's true.
The same injury bug that's gotten them the last few years is still chomping away. But yeah, not quite as bad as it was during the two meetings last year.
We're going to talk a lot of quarterbacks today, Matt. Is that okay with you? I don't know if you guys are talking much about the quarterbacks down there in the Bay, but that's what we want to talk about today.
All right, let's do it. Let's do it.
So. I want to start with this here. Is there anyone who believes in Jimmy G? And I'm including like his family members, girlfriend or wife. Is there anyone who believes in Jimmy G more than Kyle Shanahan? Because I feel like to still be throwing him out there like this, like he has a strong faith in this guy, it feels like.
I thought you were going to say, is there anyone out there who believes in Jimmy G? And I was about to say, well, Kyle Shanahan does. But yeah, I mean, you know, coming out of that game, there was a lot of Jimmy G frustration among the fan base. And I think Kyle Shanahan was very careful. The first question about Garoppolo, he said that I thought he played really well against the Packers. And really well, probably not. I mean, it was definitely an up and down game. He finished up well. That last drive obviously gave him the lead with 37 seconds left. But it was, you know, there were some really dubious passes in that game, passes in which he was throwing into traffic, passes in which he was kind of setting his receivers up for big hits. You never want to see that. Just not seeing the field really well. And he had a couple of things going against him. Zero running game, and he's a guy that really needs that play action. He needs kind of every benefit of that offense in order to be a good above average quarterback. And he didn't have that. And he also was getting beat up pretty badly. 11 hits. Rarely do you see, I don't know, half a dozen might be the norm for an NFL game. This was double that. So he had a headwind against the Packers and did okay. I think that's enough to sort of keep most of the uproar down in the Bay Area about him and Trey Lance. But, I think it's, you know, two or three more losses, and I think it becomes a lot louder and nonstop. So, and that also kind of coincides with the bye week as well. So these are not must-win games, but these are very important games for the 49ers, and maybe even more important for Jimmy Garoppolo.
When I watched the Packers game, the tape this morning, actually, I didn't get a chance to watch it in real time because I was working, but I'm glad you said, you confirmed a lot of things that I was thinking this morning. He was setting up his receivers to get destroyed. Absolutely. Debo, Ayuk, do they have Sanu again? Is that who number six is?
Sanu?
He's back. Just setting them up to get just wrecked. And I want to know and I looked at some numbers this morning too. It does seem like Kyle's faith in Jimmy G, correct me if I'm wrong here, is rooted in the idea of like, all right, if we run the ball well and our defense is good, and I keep the passes easy, you know, behind the line of scrimmage, real close to the line of scrimmage, Jimmy G's fine. But the defense is below average. The running game's not there. So how much longer can, if those things continue to be true, how much longer can Jimmy G, you know, start in this offense?
Well, I mean, it's going to depend on how well they do as a team. I mean, the overall plan, it seems to be, is to ride Jimmy Garoppolo as long as they are playoff contenders. So, like I said, any sort of long skid, I think, will start to prompt a change. But, you know, the Packers had a really good game plan against them. They moved the safeties up into the box. They took away that outside run, the stretch zone that the 49ers like to run. No Raheem Mostert, so there's no running back sort of zipping out to the edge. The Packers were beating the 49ers to the edges and basically daring Garoppolo to go over the top. And when he did, he threw in an interception. I'm not sure that was a bad ball. That was a really great
play by Jair. Oh my God.
I mean, he was the backside cornerback on that. So you don't expect that guy to come zooming in over the top, you know, three quarters of the field. And he did. It was just a tremendous play. I actually thought it was a pretty good pass. In hindsight, should have led him more to the left side of the field than to the center of the field. But I don't think as a quarterback, you're considering the backside cornerback on that throw. And he didn't seem to get dinged by Shanahan afterwards on that either. But the thing is that Jimmy Garoppolo rarely goes downfield. He's attempted exactly four throws beyond 20 yards this season.
Yikes.
Only Matt Ryan with three has attempted fewer, and only one of those four throws has been a completion. That was a 79-yarder, mostly a catch and run to Debo Samuel in week one. So, I mean, that's the smart move, defensive move against Garoppolo. Make him beat you deep because he does not like to go deep. That's borne out over the course of his career, not just this season. He's one of the guys, when you look at that 20 yards or more, he's always at the, if he's not last, he's second to last on that list.
How does Jimmy feel, do you think, about, all right, we're at the goal line at the four, we're about to punch it in. Oh, never mind. Hey, Trey, how about you come in now? Like, how has Jimmy handled that part of this two quarterback dynamic?
He doesn't complain. I mean, he's not sort of a type A guy like that, where when he's pissed off. He's kind of gone along with it. I mean, again, he doesn't have much sway in the matter. If he did complain, nobody would care. And then in week two, they had a lot of short yardage and goal situations, and Trey Lance got zero snaps, and Jimmy Garoppolo had four sneaks, including a touchdown at the end. So it's not like they always take him out in those situations. Shanahan sometimes does and sometimes doesn't. Sort of goes by feel so far. And that's what's sort of, I don't know if frustrating is the word to fans, but it's hard to figure out exactly what the rhyme or reason is. And I guess that's a good thing, because if fans could figure it out, then defenses could as well. So you never know when Trey Lance is coming into the game. It's been varied situations to this point.
You know, that makes me think, Chris, that somebody is getting an earful from Jimmy. It's either, is he married? Is Jimmy G married?
No, he's not. He lives with his brothers.
Okay, so it's probably his brothers or the mom, somebody, QB coach, that they're getting the paragraph text from Jimmy furious about. If he's not letting this show on the sideline or in the film room, somebody's getting it at home. Because that would just feels like that would just throw off the rhythm of just what's going on, especially if I get us to the goal line. I'm Jimmy. Yeah. I get us there. And it's like, well, this other guy gets to punch it in. You know, didn't that happen in week 1, too? Like, they just let Trey punch it in on, like, the first touchdown of the year or something?
Yeah, I think they were at the 11 at that point, and he threw an easy touchdown. But that was the complaint that Drew Brees had the last few seasons when Taysom Hill would come in. You know, being a quarterback is all about kind of being in rhythm, in sync, being one with your offense. And when I come off the field for half a dozen, 10 plays, it's interrupting that flow. And so Brees, who is a type A guy, talked about that over the years, and he had to adjust to that. And he and Garoppolo actually had an off-season conversation about exactly that. So Garoppolo sort of accepted it. But your point about him getting hot and bothered, that's both his strength and I think his weakness, or at least a perceived weakness, is that he's not like that. He's not a guy that emotes in the locker room. He doesn't, but he also isn't a guy that takes charge in the locker room. I mean, I would say that this is George Kittle's team, not the quarterback's team. And that's an odd statement that a tight end would be the dominant personality, the alpha in a locker room. But that's it. That's the case. Garoppolo, like I said, living with his brothers. I forget where he falls in the family. I think he's third to youngest of four boys. You kind of, learn how to get along and go with the flow and be one of the guys. And that's who he is. He's one of the guys. He's not the one who's kicking ass and sort of taking over. He's not Drew. He does not have the Drew Brees personality, for good or for worse, in this situation.
So what can we expect from the Trey Lance element of, this 49ers offense against the Seahawks, against the Seahawks defense that is giving up just yards, big plays? I mean, if you would get a chance to watch the all 22 against the Vikings, Matt, you're going to be like, wow, the Niners are going to score 30 on these guys, no matter if they put their third stringer in. So do you think that maybe when Shanahan's watching that film, probably right now, and he's like, let's put Trey in a little bit more this week?
Well, I mean, we all thought that going into the Green Bay game. This is a great way. Green Bay was coming off a short week. They had played the Monday night beforehand. This is a great way to keep, catch a team off guard, because, not only do they have to prepare for the 49ers offense and their sort of unique rushing attack, they've got to prepare for Trey Lance. Well, he brought in Trey Lance basically for two plays. There were actually three, but one of them was wiped out by a penalty. So, not a lot of Trey Lance action, despite a seemingly perfect opportunity to do that. So, again, I don't know. And Trey Lance doesn't know either. They have a certain package going into every week. And like I said, Shanahan basically plays it by feel. His refrain all offseason long is that I now see quarterback like I see the wide receiver position or running back. I've got multiple guys, and if I like a matchup, if I like a scenario, I'm going to insert Lance into this one. There's no script, I guess I should say, that, okay, we're going to use Lance six times in this game. We're going to use him here, here, and here. It's all by feel by the head coach / play caller.
That sounds super college-y. Like, that sounds really dangerous to try to use in the NFL for a team that wants to, like, win a championship. And that's before you even factor in the fact that they spent, enough money to go to space with Elon Musk in terms of draft capital to get Trey Lance. Oh boy, I don't know, Chris. That might not.
It might.
That's a dangerous plan. If it feels like
good for Kyle Shanahan, though.
Good for him, indeed. Dangerous plan. What is the plan with Deebo Samuel? Because he is second in receiving yards this season behind Cooper Kupp, who is lighting up everyone right now. And Deebo's healthy. Last season he got banged up a few times, but right now he's 4 weeks in, damn near, and he's playing. He's out there playing, so he's healthy. What has there been any changes with how they're using him, or is it, we're going to give him the ball and he's going to make up for it, whether he's catching a 7-yard slant, 7-yard out. He's going to get 10 more yards, punish defenders coming towards him. And how do you see that matchup going against the Seahawks?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a few factors in Samuel's fast start of the season. One is that he was the best guy in training camp. He was a man on a mission all throughout the summer. And, I think he felt like he's been sort of typecast as a catch and run guy, basically a running back who plays wide receiver. And he wanted to, diversify a bit, show that he can do the deep ball, show that he can do the over the middle stuff. And he was on point from day one. He's been a special product of Wes Welker, the wide receivers coach. Wes is really kind of taken him under his wing and pushed him. It's been tough love. Debo tends to get a little bit heavy. He likes to kind of smash through people, and Welker has made sure that he stays under 220, both for speed reasons and for reliability, for health reasons. And he did that this offseason. He looks faster. He hasn't been slowed by injuries to this point. Now, my question is whether he can play that way. He had 10 targets, for example, on Sunday against the Packers. And as Mike noted, I mean, some of those are in traffic. He's getting hit hard.
Yeah.
He's good when he's the one delivering the hit, but I just wonder if he can keep up with that workload that they're giving him right now. Especially these sort of dangerous balls in traffic. I just can't see it. Him going a full 17 games like that. The other, part of the equation is that Brandon Ayuk got off to a slow start. So he has not kind of built the trust in Garoppolo that Debo Samuel has. So like I said, I forget what the numbers are now, but coming out of week two, Debo was being targeted.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It was Debo and Cooper Kupp at the very top, targeted more than any other team targets a pass catcher on those teams. So there's definitely a great connection between Garoppolo and Samuel right now. I think the 49ers would like to kind of diversify that more so that teams have more to deal with. But Samuel is off to a very strong start to the season.
Hint, Seahawks, you might want to try to guard this guy. I'm not sure if you're going to, as what we saw the last few games, but definitely want to get a hold of Debo before he gets rolling. You did mention Brandon and his game. We talked about a little bit off wax, but I want to hear your thoughts on the game plan going into this game against the Seahawks, because again, their secondary hasn't been playing up to the standards that everyone thought they would be based on the situation at hand. But is this a week where Brandon can have a spark and Debo kind of gets a break and he's not taking those hits over the middle? He kind of gets the relief of, oh, someone else is stepping up.
You would think. I mean, Ayuk is probably their best deep threat. So if the Seahawks are borrowing from the Packers and moving those safeties up and taking away the running game and forcing Garoppolo to go deep, that's the natural outlet. I know that that throw against the Packers was to George Kittle, and he's obviously an option too. But you would think that Ayuk is the best option of that group. He didn't do it a lot the last few weeks. He hadn't been fully healthy. And like I said, I just don't think that they're, the chemistry between quarterback and Ayuk is quite there yet. So he's been getting a bit of tough love from Shanahan and I'm sure from Wes Welker as well. And it's something that I think that they're hoping to will blossom as the year goes on. But, you know, the 49ers' big issue offensively right now is that they don't have a great tailback situation. Raheem Mostert got hurt in week one. He's out for the season. Elijah Mitchell came out of nowhere. He was a sixth-round pick, looked really good in week one and week two, but he got hurt in week two and is a question mark this week. And then Trey Sermon came in, third-round pick, highest Kyle Shanahan has drafted a running back since he got here in 2017. And he has not met expectations. He was inactive, healthy scratch in week one. And that's sort of the way the 49ers draft has gone. It's a topsy-turvy draft for them. The first five picks haven't played very much. The last four, there were eight altogether. First four haven't played much. The last four have played a lot. And the last four have been better than the initial four. So,
sounds like a Seahawks draft a little bit.
Exactly.
Seahawks had half their damn first and second round picks inactive last week.
Well, terrible. That's what the 49ers have had too. So I think something to watch for Seahawks fans, if Elijah Mitchell is practicing this week, like I said, sixth round pick out of Louisiana, he's got speed, toughness. If he's practicing, the 49ers are a lot happier than if he's not.
I've given up on Elijah already. Who's on my fantasy team? All my fantasy teams are bad.
0-6
No
overall?
One wants to care about my fantasy team, but Tupac cares. If don't nobody else care. I was looking some Debo numbers up. Good Lord. Dude's averaging 10 yards after the catch per reception. That is insane. And it does seem like, though, Debo's uniquely built to help Jimmy G. Since they're I don't know where Jimmy ranks in like average depth of target. I imagine it's probably pretty low. Do you know where it is?
Yeah, no, I don't, but I just know that it's a lot of short passes. And you're right. I mean, that's why Samuel was drafted. That's why Ayuk was drafted. They're both really good with the ball in their hands. And George Kittle is as well. So that's what this offense with Jimmy G is built on. The idea moving forward is that somebody with a stronger arm, i.e. Lance, will expand things in all directions.
That was where I was going to go with that. Is that what it looked like when you guys got to see him in camp and stuff like that? Did it look like, okay, now there's a downfield passing game in this offense?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Boy, that's scary.
And not scared to go there either. That was the sort of the takeaway early in camp. Had a really aggressive mentality when he was back. And you think a rookie, he's going to come in, he's going to be a little bit hesitant early on, check down, stuck to the sideline. And Trey Lance wasn't. I mean, he was going for the jugular, every time he got the ball. And that was either with his arm or with his feet. And things started to, even out as camp went along. He made a big impact early. And then Garoppolo played well as well. And then Lance had some issues with extending drives and this, that, and the other. And so he never really overtook Garoppolo. And then the 49ers seem to have a set idea that, like I said, it's going to be Garoppolo until we have to go to Lance. We're going to ride Garoppolo into the playoffs. That's the idea. And then next year, if we say goodbye to Garoppolo, then we have a guy who's been in the system for a full year, and then we turn the keys over to him at that point. So that seems to be the way it's going. But there doesn't seem to be a steady kind of ramp up of Lance. It's been staggered over the first three games.
You know, I think it's panic mode up here in Seattle right now because of how everything's gone. But this is some decent news, because if Trey can sling that thing, that's a whole new dimension. Because
opens up the field and everything.
Yeah, because you look at the quarterbacks they've been bad against this year. which is pretty much all of them. But like even Carson Wentz, who they beat up on, he'll sling that thing. He just won't sling it downfield if like he doesn't have T.Y. Hilton. That, you know, like, and Kirk will sling that thing, which he did, and Tannehill will sling that thing. After Jimmy threw that pick against the Packers, I don't think he tested the deep ball again really the rest of that game. But if Trey's unfazed, see, whoo, man, I think Trey should play if I'm Kyle Shanahan, because
we don't want to see that.
Well, yeah, it's the we matters there. Like, I wouldn't be entertained by that. I'm sure, Matt, you would too, if we got to see Trey throw it against the secondary. If that's his bag, if he can throw downfield, if like this is the game to give it a shot.
Well, I take it from your comments that DJ Reed hasn't done well in these games. I wanted to ask about him because, you know, the 49ers could use him at the moment. They've got their own cornerback issues.
So here's the thing with DJ. He's basically CB1 right now and played pretty steady in their first couple games. Like, I think he had some really good reps against AJ Brown and Julio last week, or in week 2 against the Titans. He had one in particular. Man, I wish we could use game film on here. He's lined up against AJ Brown on a third down in the red zone, and he's like basically in a slot. It's like a two-way. AJ has a two-way go, and DJ is just playing like 9 yards off, as you should in that scenario. AJ breaks outside, has great coverage, forced the incompletion. Titans kick a field goal. That was great. Give up 2 touchdowns to the Vikings in the red zone. One of them, he just gets worked by Justin Jefferson. The other one, Thielen chops his feet before breaking inside, and DJ ends up touching the ground like they're playing Twister. And it was just
tough week.
So it's hot and cold. It's hot and cold there, and I feel like that's the story of the Seahawks secondary right now. There might be a great play here and then a big one there. A great play here, and then all night you can't get off the field on third down. So, like, whereas the Niners are having their issues, which we'll talk about here, the Seahawks are having theirs. I think I saw they worked out 3 corners today.
We need bodies.
I think they worked out Josh Shaw. Did the Niners ever have Josh Shaw, that USC dude?
I don't think so. No, not for.
Oh, he was with the Cardinals. He was with the Cardinals. That's right. Yeah, he's the guy who I think, if I remember that right, we're getting sidetracked now, but his story is funny. I think he's the dude who jumped out of a window and like hurt himself when he was at USC and then lied about it and said he was saving a kid.
Yes, I remember that story.
You guys remember? Yeah, you remember that?
Terrible lie. I get the reasoning, but
I think he's also the dude. This is a Josh Shaw podcast now. The dude that bet on a Cardinals game when he was on IR and got suspended for a year because he bet like Cardinals in the first half while he was in Vegas and then got suspended.
Oh, okay. You're not supposed to do that when you're on a team? Oh, I didn't know that.
I really don't think he knew. Like, he used his name on the slip and everything. I didn't know
I couldn't do this. Let me
he was going to have no bearing on the game, so why not?
Yeah, he was on like IR. You know, I think like he bet Pete against Rose. Them yeah, too. Exactly. I'm about to look that up while we ask. But let's talk about who's actually. Yeah, that was him. Anyway, it was part of a 3-team parlay. Good Lord, that is terrible.
You got the ticket right in front of you.
Oh, good God. Let's talk about the Niners cornerback situation, because they're one of the many teams in a division that need corners. Everyone does, really. I think the Cardinals just signed Quentin Dunbar. Like, everyone needs corners right now across the league, really. I think the Panthers just traded for one after they lost J.C. Horn. So, like, how many corners are actually healthy on this team? Like, it seems like they're all banged up right now.
Yeah, I'd say the only ones that are healthy are the two healthy scratches against the Packers. That's Trey Kirkpatrick and Ambry Thomas, who was another third-round pick who just hasn't been very good this year. So I think that Dre Kirkpatrick is definitely going to be up in uniform. He's a guy that they brought in, 10 days ago after week one. So, I mean, he's still getting up to speed, literally getting his legs under him and learning the defense. But, it's going to depend on Josh Norman. He took a helmet to the chest from Aaron Jones against the Packers and was spitting up blood in the hospital with 2 bruised lungs shortly after the game. And Shanahan said, yeah, there's a good chance he'll practice on Wednesday. So
good Lord.
Once you have a CT scan and it shows no fluid, no blood in the lungs, you're cleared to go after that. So I don't know. I mean, to me, that seems. I mean, I would want to.
That's ridiculous.
I would want to take at least one game off after being sent to the hospital with 2 punctured lungs, which is what it was. But if he plays and it's him and it's Emmanuel Mosley, and I thought Mosley played pretty well against the Packers. You know, the 49ers have had huge issues with DK Metcalf in recent years.
Specifically, they, Emmanuel Mosley.
Specifically, Emmanuel Mosley. And they just had a huge problem with Davante Adams. And they've got DeAndre Hopkins coming up after the Seahawks game. So this could be, I mean, like I said, I feel like the Packers put together a tremendous blueprint for beating the 49ers, which is max protect. They had seven guys back on some plays, which meant that, Aaron Rodgers had all day to throw. And then as soon as somebody broke through, he just threw to the outside, with faith that his awesome receiver, Davante Adams, could get open against the 49ers cornerbacks, and that's exactly what happened. But I just feel like the upcoming opponents, Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray, can do many of the same things that Aaron Rodgers can. Maybe not quite to Rodgers' level, but it's the same idea, same principle at play in each of these upcoming games.
I was curious because I was on the train of bringing Josh Norman to the Seahawks for a cornerback spot.
Were you?
Yeah. You laughed at me. It's okay.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I was going to laugh again. Okay.
I wanted to hear your thoughts, Matt, how he's played so far 3 weeks in the season, although he is banged up. What you saw, what you've seen so far, how's it looked out there?
It's been good. I mean, it's, you know, for a street free agent, which is what he was, it's all you can ask for. He's not Josh Norman from the Panthers. I mean, he does not move like he used to. There's some kind of veteran things that he does to sort of compensate for that. There's a lot of hooks and, pull on the jersey to kind of make sure your guy's not getting away from you. I think that, maybe him versus DK would be better than him versus Lockett. I mean, I feel like he's going to struggle with faster, quicker guys who are good in space, because he just doesn't have those movement skills anymore. So it's basically Richard Sherman on one side. That's the idea. The smart, savvy veteran who doesn't quite move the way he did before on one side, and youngsters on the other.
Yeah, there you go, Josh Norman. Here's two bruised lungs and DK Metcalf.
Have fun.
Yeah, exactly.
That just sounds so awful. I mean, you know, speaking of Sherm, though, too. Sherm, for Seahawks fans who don't know, listening now, hey, the Sherm thing's not going to happen here. He's not coming back. To my understanding, I think he's already visiting Tampa Bay today. The Niners are the other team that's interested in Richard. How do you think that would fit, Matt, if he decided, Tampa Bay's not for me, I don't like this Tom Brady guy, I don't like his face, so I'm going to go back to the Bay. How do you think Sherm would fit with what's going on there right now? Would it just be a plug and play? Like, if he signed there, could he play this week even? How would you think that would go?
Yeah, I mean, he absolutely could. I mean, I think it's clear that he wasn't at the top of their free agent list. I mean, the 49ers already have brought in two veterans off the street since the season began, Norman and Drake Kirkpatrick. So they're not busting down. Sorry, that was bad. They are not eager to sign him like they had been a couple years ago. I forget how many games he was active for last year. Five.
Yeah, I think five. I think it's five.
I think five. So I mean, they're concerned that once he gets on the field, there's going to be another injury. I think that, reading between the lines, their ideal for him would have been, okay, let's sign him in mid-November and have him ready for a stretch run. Because we don't think we're going to get, 12-plus games, certainly 17 games out of him. That's basically where they are. Now, beggars can't be choosers in this scenario. So if they're, get more injuries there, Sherman's dealing from a position of power that they would have to bring him in at some point, because they've gotten so low. But like I said, there were two healthy scratches at the position going into the Green Bay game. So the depth isn't at critical levels quite yet. Although it probably is at nickel cornerback, but, Sherman doesn't play nickel.
They signed it with a Buster Screen.
Yes, I was like, he's still playing it.
I didn't know Drake Kirkpatrick was still out here.
Yeah, he got cooked by the Seahawks last year.
Yeah, I didn't know he was out here still doing his thing. There's a lot of moving parts out here at cornerback spot. This is why it's a premium position, guys, by the way. But let's close out our position preview, kind of look ahead before we get to over and under with the honestly, the matchup that might just decide the whole game really is the trenches and how well the Seahawks handle Nick Bosa, who was quieter than I thought he would be against the Packers, especially after like the first two drives when he was playing really well. What did the Packers do with their eighth string left tackle and that maybe the Seahawks could copy that helped them slow down Nick Bosa?
Yosh Nijman, that's the guy that he was going up against. Who? From
was that it? 73?
Yosh. You guys know Yosh?
Oh, man. Yosh, say the last name.
Yosh was getting toasted early, but he rallied. But the Packers, like I said, did max protect. I mean, they had Aaron Jones coming out and chipping on Bosa. They had a tight end chipping him as well. They had double teams all throughout the game. With the idea that we don't really need to send a lot of guys out, on pass routes because we'll be able to get an open guy with the guys that we have. So that worked for them. So that seems like a really smart formula to keep a tight end in as an extra blocker, especially on Bosa's side. Dee Ford didn't do much in that game. They signed Samson Ebukam, who you'll remember from the Rams. And he hasn't made a mark yet. He's sort of switching positions. He was a outside linebacker with the Rams. Now he's more of a pure defensive end for the 49ers. And that's a bit of a work in progress. So far it's been Bosa and Armstead. And really, as far as the pass rush, that's it. Obviously there's no DeForest Buckner anymore. And, that's turning out to have been a really big, as we knew it would be, a really big reason why they were so good in 2019 and not quite to that level this year.
Yeah. No, the defensive numbers are just not there for either team in this matchup. Like take the over, whatever it is, we're going to figure out, can you tell me what the over,
I got you
the over for me, real quick. And the spread before we get into the prediction here, but that is what I liked about that Packers game plan, that the Seahawks would be fools to not try. It was really simple. It was, let's get the ball to our best player, which is 17, and neutralize their best player on defense, at least which is 97. That worked. They won the game. Like it seemed pretty simple to me. That's like what the Seahawks should do here. What you got? Well, give me the over, Chris.
Here it is. The over under is 52. Probably take it.
Oh, and take the over.
They got San Francisco minus 2.5.
Ooh, we'll see. We'll hold on to that. We're gonna let Matt get to that. Let's do our own over under here though, Matt. Let's focus on George Kittle, someone we didn't talk about a ton in kind of our matchup section, but I think his matchup with him and Bobby, him and Jordan Brooks, perhaps their weak side linebacker, him and Jamal Adams, like that's going to be, the Seahawks have invested a lot in positions that will be matched up with George, and that will be very interesting to see. So let's focus on him as a pass catcher. Over under 7.5, what you're taking there for George Kittle against the Seahawks?
I'll go over on that. I mean, like I said, it's been a very heavy Deebo Samuel passer distribution through three games. I think that it starts to change. I mean, I would think that Ayuk gets more in this game. This would be, if I was trying to pick a guy who breaks out and has a big game, that would be it. But I don't want to say that Kittle has been quiet, but they haven't really leaned on him to this point. If Deebo does get a lot of attention, that would be a natural outlet. So I think 7.5 is a really smart over under there, but I'll go 8 for him.
Over. I will continue with George because I like this one. I really just thought about this because I like when he flicks flicks his hand after he gets the first down. So how many times are we going to see that in regards to a touchdown? 1.5 is the over under on George Kittle touchdowns on Sunday versus the Seahawks.
Yeah, he's not been a touchdown guy to this
My
point.
Fantasy team is aware of this, man. Yes.
if he had him in 18, you wouldn't be complaining. So I'm going to go under on that. Eric Branch, one of the guys on the beat, had a good stat today. The 49ers are the first team since the merger in 1970 in which all of their touchdowns, I think it's 11 touchdowns, have been scored by 11 different players to this point.
Wow.
So no one's doubled up, and George Kittle has not been one of those 11 players. In fact,
I knew that was coming.
There hasn't been a touchdown scored by a tight end to this point. So, I think that gets broken, but I just don't see it being broken twice in this game. So I'll go under.
Man, I had to cut Elijah Mitchell. I might have to. I might find.
So why did you cut Elijah Mitchell?
Because his team sucks, man.
Yeah, I had to. Full house.
It's gonna suck even more now. Yeah.
I had to pick up some other guys here. I think I picked up Tim Patrick, the Broncos receiver, because the Broncos have lost Jerry Jeudy and Hamler. I think are both gone for the year. I want to say so. It's like I gotta get people who will play. You know, I picked up Odell. I had AB. I think it's just I'm just not. Like I said,
it's tough.
Tupac cares, don't nobody else care about my fantasy team. But let's get a game prediction here from you, Matt. Do you know we know Matt's record picking the games? That would have been a fun one. That's all right.
Well, we can
picking the 49ers Seahawks.
Yeah. Yes, I can go back and get
I'm
that.
I'm undefeated. I'm definitely
undefeated. what you got?
Sure.
Overall, we're 2-1, though. I'll give you that.
Yeah, for the year.
For the year. So far, 2-1.
Okay. So, what you got, Matt? Who you taking to give us a score?
I'm 2-1 too. no, I am with our own.
Okay.
We predicted zero defense in the Packers game, and I guess it came to bear. It was 30-28 at the end, but it didn't feel that way. It didn't feel like the 49ers offense was just rolling like we thought it would. I love it when teams are coming off a loss. I always think that they're so much better, so much more on point. If 49ers also in that Packers game were coming off of a 2-week road trip east, and they always stink after those games. They're terrible after those games. And that stood forth against the Packers as well. So I think they'll be better. I just don't know about the running game. It was so disjointed, and they need to have that for everything else to work. So it's really dependent on Elijah Mitchell, the guy that
damn, maybe I should pick him back
Mike,
up. Damn
that
it.
Mike cut from
my
team.
I'll go to my team when we're done.
I would get him back too sweet on that one. But if he plays, I think the 49ers would roll. I think they'd score 30 points. I'd say another tight one. I think it's going to be 30-27 49ers.
So what is that? That's Niners, the over... And covering.
And covering, yeah.
And covering. Yeah. Okay, Matt's all in on the night. This is a gambling
gamble
show.
With Matt.
And I love, you know what it was, Matt? My team's so bad that Elijah didn't play week two. So I couldn't afford to hold him out. No, he didn't play.
He did play. He wasn't great.
He wasn't good. And then he didn't play week three. So it's like, okay, I'm desperate here. I'm 0-3 in this league. Like, I can't afford to wait until he practices maybe on Wednesday. So that's what it is. I like that. What do you think about the pick? About the Niners pick.
Seahawks are 1-3. That's bad news for us, but hey, you know.
Matt, I'm going to do you a favor. I'm going to put Chris on the spot here. What you got, Chris?
I also have the Niners winning.
Ah,
I'm sorry.
Oh,
I don't see the defense getting it all together right now at this point in time. And then it doesn't get better because you got the Rams. But yeah, I think the Seahawks end up losing, I would say, 30-21.
Oh, boy, that would be.
Russ only puts 21 points on the board. Wow.
Hell, he put up 17
on the Vikings.
And they're ass. So, yeah, you know.
The Vikings defense was not very good. And he was just, not just Russ is playing. Russ is actually playing fine. It's just what's going on up here, Matt, is very poor. If you were turning to talk radio in Seattle, you'd be like, wow, this team is 0-11 and the sky is falling. That is what it feels like up here. So if they lose this game, the sky will actually, like a piece of the cloud will fall down.
I told you that needle. Josh Norman is out there with an IV bag at cornerback. He's toting that thing around.
Well, that's the thing about the Vikings. They have, what's his name? Bashad Breeland, I think. He's there like, it's called the mark. I call it the target. The guy that the quarterback just decides, I'm going to go at you because you can't cover my guy. Right. For Aaron Rodgers, it was whoever 30-something is that came in for Josh later
that's
in the game.
Diamador Lenore. Yeah, he's the rookie.
I can't tell. I don't know who the roster is. So it was actually fun to just say, oh, whose number this? It was very, very good. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers.
But you're absolutely right. That totally happened. I mean, and Aaron Rodgers is the pro at that. He's like the wolf. Like once he smells a little bit of weakness and blood, he's going after that guy the whole game.
Yeah, and that's I think he hit him for a bomb. I think he throws the cover two touchdown over that guy's head in the end zone to Marquez, I think. But yeah, Rodgers just carved him up. So maybe Russ does the same thing. I don't know. I'm not obligated to take a pick or make a pick until Fridays. And that's just the luxury we have, you know, when I get to announce the show.
We should point out this is Tuesday. So we're
yeah, no, that's, we love putting you guys on the spot early in the week before we gather a ton of information that would possibly change the pick. That's fun. That's fun to me because I don't have to make the pick.
That's the beauty.
Until Friday, man. So there it is. Matt's set in stone. Chris is set in stone. You guys can't change your pick. even after you get more information, because that's not how it goes around here. We want to thank you guys for listening to the Seahawks Man to Man podcast. Thank you for watching the Seahawks Man to Man podcast for all of our YouTube viewers. Again, make sure you subscribe to our YouTube. Download the YouTube, the app Musi, M-U-S-I. Even if you don't want to watch the show, you can go to that. That's YouTube, essentially. And you can close out of it and still listen to the show. So you're listening to it on YouTube, but you're still giving us the views. And we appreciate that love. It's a way to tweak the game. Shout out to our guest on the show making his 97th appearance, Matt Barrows. Matt, you got anything you want to plug coming up this week before we let you go?
No, got a mailbag in today on Tuesday. Those are always lively. They're livelier after losses, I've noticed. So we got that going up right now and lots of stuff throughout the week. So just click on the 49ers page and there'll be a ton of stuff from me and David Lombardi.
All right, appreciate it. Thank you guys for listening. Matt, I will see you on Sunday. On that note, we're out.
Peace. From a time to your bag and a color on your lip. Yeah,